For homeowners and home buyers alike, hiring a home inspector can mean the difference between sinking lots of money into a so-called money pit or buying the home of your dreams. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Great to have John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates back with us in Fitchburg, as where his main office is located, here to share what he knows about keeping your home in good shape and how to save money at the same time. He specializes in evaluating older structures, and he's here to take your calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And John, thanks for coming back. Appreciate it very much.
Glad to be here again, Larry.
As spring arrives, the weather begins to warm up. This is a busy time for home inspectors.
I think it is, Larry. February was very, very slow. Wisconsin weather just really kept a lot of people from buying houses. So I think what we saw in March and now in April is all that pent-up demand. The people that were snowed in are out there shopping and buying. So things are very busy.
Maybe, certainly I think a home inspection is, if you're going to buy a house, you want that home inspected, do you not?
Yes, I think so. And it really is becoming universal, Larry. I don't think too many houses are sold now without having an inspection on them. It just gives people a little bit more peace of mind. And from the bankers that I've talked to, they really don't want to write a loan on a house unless they think the house is still going to exist when the last mortgage payment is made. Probably wise on their part.
Yeah.
But the bankers have gotten ever more rigorous on the loans and looking at things like old wiring and refusing to write loans on houses that have old knob and tube wiring.
Well, could you walk through a basic home inspection with us?
I can. The Home Inspection Wisconsin is outlined by the state of Wisconsin, and anybody can go on the internet. Thankfully, Wisconsin is wonderful. Everything is open in Wisconsin. And you can go to the Department of Professional Services and download SPS 134. And those are basically the standards of practice for home inspection. And they're a little bit complicated, and they're a little bit interesting. There's a lot of things a home inspector doesn't have to look at. So it's good when you talk to a home inspector to find out what he or she, and we actually finally have some women in the profession, of exactly how much they do for you, and ask them if they have a specialty. A lot of people call me because I know timber framing, I know brace framing, I know old masonry. But basically what a home inspector is going to do is they have to have in their report everything that is listed in this Chapter 134. So they're going to start out with the mechanicals. So they're going to look at the plumbing and the heating and the electrical system. They're going to take a look at the envelope, which is the roof, the siding, the windows and doors, and general conditions of the exterior. They're going to take a look at the insulation system. They're going to look at things like fireplaces and chimneys, and they're going to take a look at the ventilation of the attic, because ventilation of attics is a big concern of home inspectors because of the issues that we have in Wisconsin with ice damming and with mold. And I get called into an awful lot of ice dam and mold situations when we have a winter like this last one where we had so much snow sitting on the roofs for so long.
Yeah. And we're probably going to get some mold questions today, as a matter of fact. As we move along. Well, how do you pick an inspector?
Well, all inspectors in Wisconsin have to be registered by the state, which means that they've passed a national exam. It's about a four-hour exam. And the inspectors have to maintain their license by doing continuing education. And again, because it's the state of Wisconsin, you can go to the Department of Professional Services and check to see whether Dave Smith is a registered home inspector. The next question I would ask, Larry, is whether they belong to a professional association. You don't have to belong to anything. But usually the people who are members of the National Association of Home Inspectors, the American Society of Home Inspectors, et cetera, they're spending $300, $400, $500 a year to get additional education. Yeah. And many of them will follow a higher standard of practice because many of these national associations have a standard of practice that is a bit more rigorous than the state of Wisconsin. So you're maybe getting a little bit more for your money.
So lots of good things. And what happens, you get the report back, and here there's most everything's right, but there's some problems here and there.
That's when you hope you have a good and knowledgeable real estate broker. Hmm. And what often will happen, if I look at a house, Larry, and I find a bunch of knob and tube and some really bad wiring and things, mm-hmm. but I'll list the types of code violations and issues that I've seen in my report, but then I'll say, we need to have a licensed electrician really come through this house. And one reason for that, Larry, is that there are limits on what a home inspector can do. I can't take a ceiling fan down to see if there's a support box. I can't take things apart. The only thing I can take apart is the main electrical panel. So a wise home inspector will refer things out to a specialist. So if you're not quite so sure about the furnace, you're going to say we need to have an HVAC tech take a look at this furnace. So generally then what the brokers will do is they will set up an inspection by a professional. If there is a problem, they're going to have a cost to repair and remediate, and then they'll negotiate that out one way or the other. And that's really out of the home inspector's hands at that point. That's really up to having a good broker.
Our guest today, John Freiberger, who is a registered home inspector he evaluates older structures in particular, founder of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg, here to answer your questions. And we have lots of callers online. And so we will go to the phones and go to our emails and our Facebook comments as well. Right now, as a matter of fact, let's start with Mark in Cashton. Mark, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a problem with a house built in 1997, and I have crank-out windows that are vertical in nature, and almost all of them, maybe a few don't, but have mold around the bottoms and the sides, and I'm trying to decide if I can redo that myself or if I have to replace these windows, and I'm just wondering if you had any advice on what to do about
the mold
moldy windows.
Is it inside the panes, between panes as well?
No.
It
is around the frame of the wooden frame of the window.
Okay. What do you think, John?
Well, it sounds like Mark has a casement window. And
yes.
In Wisconsin, if you take a look at a chart of when you get condensation in Wisconsin, as soon as that temperature drops on the exterior down to about 25 degrees, if we have anything around 40% humidity in a house, we are going to get condensation on windows. The first thing to check, Mark, is maybe in the winter, to make sure your house isn't above 40%, maybe even try to get it down to 35%, which is still pretty comfortable. Mm-hmm. The lower you have the interior humidity, the less condensation you're going to have, because as the humidity goes down, the dew point temperature will also go down.
Right.
So I would go out and purchase a humidistat for next fall and put it in your house and sort of monitor what your humidity is. And if it's 45 or 50%, you're going to need to take a look at where is that moisture coming from and how do we get rid of it.
Okay.
Now, 1997 house may be pretty tight because you should have a vapor barrier. That vapor barrier may be working as an air seal. And what you'd want to do is take a look for the sources of moisture in your house. And I can actually refer you to the cold climate housing department at the University of Minnesota. You should be able to go there and actually download a nice chart from them. And it'll tell you how many pints of moisture go in the air from you breathing, from the dog, from the plants, from the aquarium, etc. So take a look at that first.
All right.
If these are decent quality wood windows, you should be able to refinish them yourself, starting out with a 400 or a 220 sandpaper, being careful not to scrape the glass. You may have to touch up the stain. I find that the Minwax oil stains seem to do a really good job on windows. They can penetrate the wood. It may end up being a little bit darker, but by the time you get a couple coats of varnish on, that's really going to help. And remember that the standard for varnish is actually three coats on windows. Three coats closes over 96% of the pores, so it's less likely then that the varnish is going to be lifted off or the moisture really go into the wood.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And Colleen in Eastman has a window-related question, too, I believe. Hi, Colleen.
Hi, I have another window question. I bought my house with my husband last summer. It was built in 2000, and I'd say the majority of the windows in our home have a staining where we were told by our inspector that the gas between the two panes of glass has leaked and created that staining. So I was curious if there's anything we can do or if we really do need to replace those windows.
Now, Colleen, by staining, do you mean sort of a white filmy look between the panes of glass?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Like clouded over.
Right, yeah. Your inspector is correct. The seals on those windows have indeed failed. And the windows are almost certainly out of warranty with the house built 14 years ago. So what you're probably looking at is replacing the sealed units. Now, one thing to be very careful of with sealed units is if you have a house like Mark's where you're getting a lot of water down there at the bottom of the windows, that has a tendency to erode the sealed units. So again, you recall the same advice that we gave to Mark to watch your humidity and not get too much condensation on those windows. You will probably be able to find that a local glass company is going to be able to replace those sealed units for you fairly easily. Remember to check with them on what the R value is, because there's a big difference between sealed units. The R value can be anywhere from 2 to 3.5 or even a little bit higher. Hmm. And so if you currently have a window that has like a heat mirror glass and is argon filled, you don't want to replace that with the cheapest thing out there because then they're not going to perform as well. So do your homework. Make sure you talk to a really reputable glass company. But sealed units are replaced all the time.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thanks, Colleen. Appreciate the call. Colleen mentioned an inspector again, and that brought to mind a Facebook comment that we got who said, the person said, I've heard that you're wasting your money if you have a home inspection done by an inspector through a realtor, as it's almost a guarantee that it will pass to allow getting the sale completed. What do you think?
Boy, that's a hot topic, isn't it, Larry? But I can tell you this. When I was doing my PhD work here, one of my friends went into the real estate business, and he owns a large firm here in Madison. And he talked to me about 10 years ago, and he said, John, I tell everybody to avoid you. Your office nickname is Dr. Death. So there is, I think, a question. By the way, I am a member of the Wisconsin Realtors Association, and that it is a good organization. And most realtors are really, really careful. Usually what most realtors are advised to do is to give the buyer three names and let them pick. Mm-hmm. I think if a realtor is just saying, you've got to use Jones Inspection Service, I won't use anybody else, I think that the Wisconsin Realtors Association would see that as being a little bit of an ethical problem. Okay. And I think it's also a liability problem for the realtor from what I know from reading the Realtors magazine.
Well, it's just from a realtor's perspective, if I give some kind of crooked inspector, the word is going to get out. I mean, if the people who buy the home aren't happy, they're going to complain.
That's correct, Larry. And we did have a situation in Wisconsin a couple years ago in a case that I was involved in because I also do some litigation support, very known as expert witness work, where the realtor was hit with an award against him of $147,000 because he had sold a house that had failed its inspection and then did not disclose that failed inspection. So Wisconsin is very consumer-friendly, and most realtors and most home inspectors know that, and they are very, very careful. But I think the choice of three is always a good rule to follow. And people be sure to check references.
Talking today with John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg, I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And when you call, Carl Christensen is right there with a big smile on his face to answer your questions here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Hugh in Brown Deer has a question for you. Let's go to Hugh. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. We live in an older house, and we have a concrete driveway that's deteriorated considerably over the years. and I'm considering replacing the concrete driveway with an asphalt driveway. And I was wondering if you had any tips or suggestions as to what we should look for when we're going to get three bids for the driveway. And I would very much appreciate if you had any suggestions.
Yes, Hugh. Sometimes the most important thing about the driveway isn't whether it's asphalt or concrete, but what's underneath it. You put asphalt over dirt or put concrete over dirt, it's just not going to last very long. So one of the things that you want to watch for is, what are they doing as far as a subbase? Do they come out with a shovel and do a little bit of digging to see what's underneath there? Is it all dirt? Because you don't want them to come and pour over a substrate that's not going to give really good support. And this is especially true with asphalt. Concrete seems able to take a little bit more abuse than asphalt. The other thing to take a look at asphalt is how thick a driver you're putting in. Is it a 3-inch one layer? Is it a 4-inch two layer? So take a look at all of those things. There is I'm going to probably get the name wrong, Larry, but I think it's like the American Asphalt Pavers Association.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have their book at home on my bookshelf, and it tells you what to look for in an asphalt driveway. And my guess is, Hugh, that you can probably find that online and at least send them an email, or you may be able to download helpful hints on asphalt driveways.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Is that covered, Hugh?
Yeah. Would you have a suggestion as to the thickness for the subbase and the top? I'm assuming that the subbase is going to be pretty good. This concrete driveway has been in here for 50 years. So when they originally put it in, I imagine they put it on a pretty good base to start with.
They may have put it over a good gravel base, Hugh, but due to tannic acids in the soil and such, I mean, basically the acidic nature of our soil, a lot of that gravel may have broken down. And what you may have there is more of a sandy sort of soil.
Mm-hmm.
So I think getting out there, you know, go out there and take your shovel, dig a hole about a foot deep next to that driveway and take a look, see what you have.
Yeah.
And then you can ask these guys. And the other thing, you can always get options in your contract. So they're going to replace the asphalt drive, but if they don't like the subbase, it's going to cost you an extra X dollars to go ahead and have that subbase replaced with something else. So you're not getting a change order that's highly inflated when you're already in the middle of the job.
Yeah.
You know, how do you have any suggestions as to how to pick a good contractor?
Well, again, that's always a little bit difficult. I think it is really checking the reputation. You want to find somebody who's been working there in Brown Deer. I'm sure friends of yours who have had people who have had driveways replaced. So check around, ask the people that you call for references, and actually call the references.
Mm, makes good sense. Good luck, Hugh. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We put concrete in the last time, and I was really pleased with the job the guys did. They had a base that looked like, I looked at that, and that's going to last forever, at least as long as longer than I'm living. I'm pretty sure of that.
Now, that's very important, Larry, because you will get some really soft soils where you can end up with a good foot of base with
yeah.
a large size, what's called breaker first, and then gravel over that, and then your concrete or asphalt.
On to Kent in Greenville. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. We have a 20-year-old house, and it has a leaking. The sump pump is in the corrugated plastic, you know,
yep.
Tank in the ground, in the concrete ground, and it has drain tile about 14 inches off the bottom of the container that drain in. But there's a hole in the bottom of the container. So we're in low ground, and it's leaking groundwater, and the sump pump's just pumping every 3 or 4 minutes. And I'm just wondering, when that dries out, I'm wondering, do you have any suggestions for patching that? Patching it up with epoxy maybe or something?
Well, I'm not sure I'm going to patch it. It sounds like what you've got there. I mean, Greenville is up and down, and there's hills and valleys. There's a lot of marshes in Greenville. I was born just north of you in the town center. So I know the area pretty. I know the area pretty well, but if you've got hydrostatic head pressure—that is, if the water table under your floor is actually coming up—I think I would rather pump that water out than take a look at the other things that might happen. Especially if you have a finished basement. because if that water table keeps rising, concrete is a very, very heavy form of sponge. I mean, moisture does go through concrete. And if you're beginning to see white efflorescence where the walls meet the floor and such, I think I would leave that open and be thankful that your sump pump is probably reducing some of that that hydrostatic head pressure underneath your basement floor.
Oh, I see. So you don't recommend... It seems like we're just pumping out the groundwater. Rather, I mean, I don't see water coming out of the drain tile, you know, that's 14 inches mm-hmm. above the bottom of the tank.
It's possible that you are, and what's a little bit alarming is we're still a little bit droughty. Now, maybe the Appleton area has had more rain than we've had down here in Madison, but when my sump pit, and I'm in a low sandy area, I haven't seen a drop of water in it in a year.
Well, this happens every year.
Is it mostly a springtime happening, Kent?
Yes, it is. I'm new to the house, but the neighbor says his goes all the time. So it is in the low area.
Well, one thing you can do is you can unplug it and watch it for a couple of hours and see how high it comes up.
I've done that. It does get the water in the basement. So.
Okay. My advice would be to spend the electricity and keep pumping, because you do have groundwater that's really pretty close. And yes, indeed, you are trying to empty a small aquifer. Make sure that your discharge pipe for that sump pump is run a long ways from the house.
Yes, right. We've done that.
And if there's anything you can do as far as the landscaping to try to keep your yard drier, that also is going to be helpful.
Yes, right. Could I just ask you another question? Why? It seems like I've been in houses where there's always water in the basement. I mean, why not build on a slab if you put your frost wall 4 feet down the ground and then just go up? I mean, what's the advantage of having a basement over a slab foundation?
Well, I think Frank Lloyd Wright would agree with you. He thought basements were the dumbest things we ever invented. And certainly we have designed, when we get to lake shores and areas with high water tables, most of what we design are thickened slabs. And there's a hybrid also that's sort of interesting, Hugh, is you can do a thickened slab with a short frost wall on top of it. So you still have a crawl space.
Yeah.
So you can still run the plumbing and the heat ducts and things underneath the house but not under the concrete, because that it's real worrisome when you're running things under concrete. Mm-hmm. The big problem with slab homes is that it's very difficult to change anything in the waste system of the plumbing. And then you're going to have to run your heat ducts overhead, because heat ducts down in the soil just don't work. But it could be that you are in an area where a shallower basement or raising the house a little bit higher would have been a better design.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we're 20 years past that.
Right. Thank you.
All right, Ken. Thanks.
Thanks
a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Chris in Facebook question asked, are there any codes or rules to really think about if we're looking to finish an attic in our house in Racine, Wisconsin?
I believe that Racine has probably adopted the Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code for alterations and additions. Now, I could be wrong about that, mm-hmm. but most of the major cities say that if you're making an addition or alteration, you've got to follow the code. Now, again, this is Wisconsin, I keep repeating. You can go online and download Chapter 21, 22, and 23 of the Uniform Dwelling Code and actually look at it. But here's the problems that I run into when people ask me to put a third floor on. First, the average head height has to be 7 feet. So if you have a very low attic, you may have very limited possibilities. Secondly, the floor load has to be, or the floor framing has to be capable of carrying a load of 55 pounds per square feet. Well, if you've got 2x6 floors in the attic and 12-foot spans, that was okay when you had a couple empty boxes up there in insulation, but that does not work if you're going to actually be living up there. So what I would start with is I would call an architect and have them take a look and evaluate what you have up there. Now, you could even start with a home inspector who knows quite a bit, because you can call a home inspector for general advice. And if you find one in the Racine area who knows structures a bit the way our firm does, they may be able to get you started.
We have a Facebook comment from Carolyn, again on home inspection. She wonders if it's a good idea for a homeowner to get an inspection in order to know what may need it to be upgraded in the home before selling it. That is, if not immediately planning to sell.
Oh, that's a great question. And it has two answers, Larry. Yes and no.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to give you the no first because people call me quite frequently and they say, John, I'm going to put the house on the market. And I want to know what needs to be fixed. I said, fine. I'll be happy to come over and do that. But I want you to call your attorney first. Hmm. And the law in Wisconsin is, you know, we don't know a lot about our houses. Well, we home inspectors do. But, I mean, the average homeowner doesn't know a lot. And you have to honestly disclose what you know is wrong with the house when you put it up for sale. Well, if the home inspector comes in and tells you all kinds of terrible things, you have to disclose all of that. So very frequently people call me back and they say, I talked to the broker, I talked to the attorney, I don't want to hire you, but thanks. But then I will get calls where, you know, mom and dad have passed away or moved on and the state has to sell the house and they don't want it to become a disaster during the sale. So sometimes it does make sense. But I think every situation is a little bit different. Again, as a member of the Wisconsin Realtors Association, find a good realtor, talk to them and get their advice. And if you trust them, follow that advice.
That makes good sense. Ellen in Wausau. Thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. I had another question about attics.
Okay.
We live in the country in a solid brick house, approximately 100 years old. It has a hip metal, the original standing seam metal roof. We need to provide some more insulation up there. We've, a number of years ago, we put some insulation, a little bit in the floor. There's no vapor barrier. A year ago, we put in new windows upstairs, and it's made it tighter down here. So this past winter, there's a decorative window in one end of it. There is an inch of frost on that one. It was so cold. Frost along the top and along the beams. So we've gotten three suggestions on how to insulate it, and they're all different.
Yeah.
And our one is to just blow in insulation up to the depth of, 13 inches, I think, for an R50. The other one, there's another one who would, I should also say that the way it's constructed, there's an open area. If you look down in the attic and you look down to the bottom side of the roof, it's not sealed all the way down. It's like there's a gap between the roof so that the roof itself is just resting on the wall on the beams.
Yeah.
So that there's a gathered in airspace in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we'd always left that. So there's air into the attic. Well, we never had a vent. So I suppose we could put that in. That was what somebody's suggestion was to put a vent in up above. There's a rectangular flat area at the top that the chimney goes through. So one was just to blow in insulation. One was to put in foam insulation on the underside of the roof decking, and then seal off the sides completely and have a sealed, what are they called, a sealed room or conditioned living space.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a nailed-down floor up there. Some boards across the attic, and that's there. And the other one was to put take the insulation that's out in the floor, put down 2 inches of foam above the ceiling of the second floor, and then put blown-in cellulose in there.
Right.
So we don't know what to do.
Well, it sounds, Ellen, as if you've got three pretty intelligent proposals there.
Yeah.
They're different. They're taking slightly different approaches. The last approach of vacuuming everything out of the attic, I really like, especially because, mm-hmm. you know, these old houses have some interesting stuff up in those attics,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, between the pigeons and the bats and the birds and the squirrels. Mm-hmm. Putting the 2 inches of foam down on basically the top of the ceiling gives you the vapor barrier you don't have now. It gives you an air seal, which is really important. Plus, it gives you the start of an insulation barrier. And as you get to the outside, you can thicken that up a little bit, maybe to as much as 6 inches. And then put the cellulose in the middle. I think that's a real neat way of doing older houses because half the time our heat loss, and from what you're saying about the frost, the heat loss and the frost are due to air leaking out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So it's following various holes around the chimney and elsewhere so that moist, warm air from the house is coming into the attic, and then it's condensing out.
Yep.
So that, that third idea there, sealing the floor, is really a good one. Now, we've also designed houses. In fact, I'm working on right now where the house is so complicated that we're sealing the roof rafters. But what we have to be careful to do, unless we put up what's called a hot roof, which means it's not going to shed heat very easily, is we have to have a one-inch airspace that connects that open spot you saw down below with vents up at the top. That is going to take a little bit of careful design work on your house, because it sounds like you've got like an old four square with a flat roof in the middle and at least four, pitches. So that one, that is a good idea, but sometimes it can be difficult to accomplish.
So you're saying that there'd be some sort of vent that would have to come up from that open area. They just couldn't block that area with foam between the roof, just block it that way?
What we really want is, if you think, Ellen, about that moisture that you're getting up in that attic, is you're still, no matter how careful we are about things, you're still going to get some air leaks and you're going to get some moisture in the attic. We want that moisture to leave. You're going to have some heat loss in the winter, and the warm air is going to want to rise. And if you've got a couple of vents that are put in that flat part of your roof, and a lot of people will put a big, tall vent up there, the air will leave there, and it'll actually suck it in through those lower areas around where the soffits are. And in the summer, that's going to keep the attic cooler, so you can air condition more easily. And in the winter, it's going to keep it drier. And it is also a big thing for preventing ice dams. If you want to learn a little bit more about venting, we have coravent.com, which is a great website. CORA-vent.com really discusses that very well.
And now there's a discussion between open cell and closed cell foam. Is the type of foam that would be used?
Yes, I tend to go with the closed cell two-part urethane. I'm not sure exactly why. I guess I've used it so long, I know how it performs, and I know that it'll work in an old house as a vapor barrier. Some of the open cell foams worry me a little bit, especially if we end up getting a roof leak. Because an open cell foam, if you have a roof leak, we could end up with an issue.
There you go. Good luck, Ellen. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call.
One more question very briefly. Is there any way to close off to prevent bugs or insects or bats if you kept that open space below the between the house and the roof?
Well, the third one that you mentioned, where you're putting the spray foam on, that is going to seal the house from the attic. So you may have a bat in the attic, but it's not going to get down into the house. If you put a complete the air seal, thermal barrier, vapor barrier is also the bat barrier.
All right, there you go. And if you don't want them into the attic itself, I imagine you could screen it off, that open area, somehow. Yeah. Loretta in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. We have had groundwater coming into the basement a few springs, including this past one. Near our pump that is coming in, pressure tank, there's some mold or mildew on white styrofoam, 2-inch pieces that we put on in the 70s on two walls in our basement. Question A is, should we treat the mold, mildew with vinegar, bleach, or whatever, or should we just take down the styrofoam and put something safer or something like that? It's exposed.
Well, we have a couple of issues there then. First, if the styrofoam is exposed, you've got a serious fire issue. You cannot have any foam in your basement that doesn't have a 15-minute thermal barrier over it. So the other thing is, if this is an open-cell styrofoam, that mold could be a long ways back in, and washing it is not going to make a lot of difference. The other thing I don't want you to do is use bleach inside a house. It's just too dangerous to breathe. So I think that what I would probably do is remove that. Now, there is a foam out there that you can use against the walls in Wisconsin I believe, the double check it, that it's made by, I'm not sure I'm even going to give the name. But if you, I believe that that foam is noted in the Uniform Dwelling Code in Chapter 21, which you can get online, or call your local lumberyard. And this foam has a sealed surface, so it's less likely to get mold growing on it. Plus, it has that 15-minute fire barrier, so you're going to be a little bit safer. So I think that removal and replacement may be the wisest thing to do there.
There you go. Good luck, Loretta. Thank you. And Ronnie and Amro, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, say, I'm in the process of selling my home, and there are some things that need to be repaired. It's nothing major. But I'm not interested in making those repairs to sell the home. So what suggestions do you have for me? I mean, people are going to come in, they're going to see, I mean, I've got an exterior deck door that needs to be replaced, things like that. What kind of advice could you give to me in the event that I don't plan to repair any of this stuff?
Right. Well, the advice, again, I think, is talk to the broker that you're going to use. And usually it's a good idea to interview three brokers. And I don't want to give broker advice. I'm a member of the Wisconsin Realtors Association, but I am not a licensed realtor. But generally what I have seen happen, Ronnie, is you simply disclose it. So you say the deck door is sort of old. Now, yeah, it's open and obvious. But what you don't want to do is somebody says, I'm going to give you X dollars for the house, and then they come back with the inspection. They say, well, I need $500 off for this. Mm-hmm. For this deck door. I mean, that way they already know it going into it. And you are required by law in Wisconsin to disclose what are called defects, a significant adverse element. Right. Is that deck door a defect? Is it open and obvious? I don't know. I think this is where you really need to talk to three of your local brokers, pick out the one that you're going to list the house with, and then rely upon he or she for the advice that brokers are educated to give you.
Mm-hmm.
What if I have a contractor come in, take a look at it, give me an estimate of what it would cost to have that fixed, and then keep that document and bank that against the bottom line price that I would be getting for the home?
I think that's a very good idea.
Very good idea.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Ronnie. Good luck with the house. Appreciate your call. Talking today with John Freiberger, Wisconsin Registered Home Inspector and founder of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg, Wisconsin. You can join in with your home questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your home today and home inspections with John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you listening in. Lots of callers online. We have lots of Facebook comments. Let's take another call from Adam and Baldwin next. Adam, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is more regarding foundation migrating away from the house. We have a lot of clay in our soil. The house is built in 01. It does have tile around it, but even with as wet as it was last year, our sump pump, I don't believe, has ever run on its own. We do have a little bit of heave in one corner that we need to address, but I guess my biggest question right now is in regards to the foundation around the garage primarily, kind of seeming to migrate away from the garage slab. I don't imagine that's supposed to happen, but it kind of seems to be taking the wall with it. It's not a lot, but I want to catch it before it's a lot. I don't know that there's anything I can do about that, though. I mean, I know there's mud jacking for elevating concrete, but I don't know about moving it laterally.
And this is a 2001 home, not a 1901 home.
That's right, 2001.
All right.
You know, there are a lot of things about the home. It's a nice home. We've been very happy with it. But there are a lot of things about the home that strongly suggest it was that several corners were cut. It was just built cheaply, quickly, to make a few dollars. I don't think there's any wrap under the siding, for example, cheap windows, that kind of thing.
Okay. Let me ask you just a couple of quick questions here, Adam. So inside the garage, what you see is you see the concrete slab, and then you see a crack between it and the frost wall. And how wide is that crack?
mainly where the approach is, and the concrete approach up to the garage door, which is only, 3 to 4 feet across, to the garage slab itself is where I see the most movement, and that is probably 2 to 2.5 inches. Other spots are, maybe a quarter to a half an inch.
Okay.
You can see where they've moved, tilted, again, kind of brought the wall with.
So the wall of the garage, the frost wall of the garage, is actually no longer plumb. It's no longer straight up and down. It's rotated, most likely, outward.
Right. In some spots, that's exactly what it's done.
Now, what's the difference between the elevation inside the garage and outside the garage? I mean, if you could had X-ray vision, could see through the wall, how far is the soil below where the top of the garage slab is on the exterior?
They're probably relatively close to the same. I would say the exterior grade is probably, within a few inches of the top of the slab, not above.
Okay, well, then we do indeed have an interesting problem. Usually when we see this happening is we'll find that the exterior of the garage is 2 or 3 feet below the interior of the garage, and so we've got a different relationship. We have more lateral pressure on the inside, so it pushes the wall out. On yours, it seems like the fill is pretty well balanced between the exterior and the interior. So that is then suggesting that we've got a soil situation. And it could be that what they did is they overdug when they poured the footings. The soil was not well compacted, and it was better compacted inside the garage than outside, and that those footings are rotating. This is a really tough one to cure. It's very, very hard to fix this after the fact. Surprisingly, it isn't all that hard to replace a frost wall on a garage. Basically, they just shore the roof and the walls up. They take the wall out and put a new wall in. And at some point, that may be what you're going to have to do.
Okay.
And without, it's one of these things without seeing it, Adam, I'm not sure I can tell you much more.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. And like I said, there's heave in, a little bit of heave in one corner as well, actually complete opposite corner of the home, that the ground heaves a lot in the wintertime.
Really?
The house did not have gutters on it when we bought it. We put those on a couple of years ago, and it has gotten better. But the ground outside, I mean, there are steps almost from one spot to another just on the soil outside of several inches to a foot almost, it seems anyhow, where it's otherwise a relatively even grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, again, there's a lot of clay under the first probably 10 inches of soil, so I know it doesn't drain very well at all.
Right.
But something tends to hold that water, and the ground moves a lot.
What you may want to do, Adam, is call a local PE, Wisconsin licensed professional engineer, and make sure it's somebody who knows concrete. And have them come and buy an hour or two of their time and just have them walk around the house and see if there's anything they can do to prevent further movement. There are some drills and epoxies and other things that you may be able to use, but a PE is going to be the person who is probably going to help you the most. And I'm expecting for about $250, you can probably get an opinion from them. To get drawings and remediation specifications would take more, but at least they would be able to look at it and tell you what's going on.
Good luck. Thank you, Adam, for calling. And I got a note from Tom from Wanakee, who wondered about your experience with granite composite sinks. Have you had any experience with those?
I'm not sure what a granite composite sink is, Larry. Granite countertops, yes, but a granite composite sink, I'm not sure exactly what that is. I'm assuming that's probably granite chips and a polymer, but I'm afraid I can't comment on that one.
Sam in Menominee, Michigan has a question. Hi, Sam.
Hey, guys. Listen, I have a question. I have an older home, and I've been in it for 3 years now, and I'm wondering, when do I have to replace this roof? It's 3-tab, old shingles. I have quite a bit of gap in the, what's that called, the rain gap?
Yes.
In between all the shingles?
Right, so the tabs are shrinking.
Yes.
Yeah. I think the safest way to try to determine when they're really shot, Sam, is to do what's called a lift test. It's basically you put your ladder up, and then you very lightly touch the tabs as if you're going to lift them up. And when you get a significant number of tabs where the glue that glued the tab down to the shingle below it has failed, then at some point you're going to get a 60-mile-an-hour windstorm and half that roof's going to blow off and you're going to end up with a leak. So certainly that is one of the tests. The other thing is just looking at it. If the tabs are really shrinking and beginning to curl at the edges, you're almost certain to have failure of the glue and it's time to replace that roof. On these older roofs, you're also going to want to strip off everything. Go to an architectural-grade shingle, and you know you can actually, for companies like GIF and probably others, you can actually get a lifetime labor and material warranty on a shingle now. We're manufacturing shingles that well.
Hmm. There you go. Good luck, Sam. Thank you. And let's see. We've got Philip in Madison next. Hi, Philip. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about code requirements for footings for the foundation. We built a house in 2003, and we had a walkout basement, and they did a footing all the way around the house except for underneath that walkout door, and now I've got the cement crumbling off the slab that, you know, the door rests on. And I asked them about it. I said, you know, why aren't you putting a footing under this corner? And they said, oh, well, it's not required, and that might have been true, and I didn't press it. But is there a requirement to have a footing all the way around a foundation?
Yes, there is. And again, you should be able to download Chapter 21, and that's going to be in the first couple of paragraphs of Chapter 21 of the Uniform Dwelling Code. But that concrete that's failing may be failing for a reason other than lack of a footing. If that concrete got a lot of sunlight on it, whereas the rest of the basement didn't, I'm assuming it's part of the basement slab that just extends into that doorway?
Yes.
Yeah. Very frequently what we will find is right at the edge of the garage door in the garage or a walkout in the basement, where if they didn't use a curing compound and the sun came down and that concrete set up more quickly, even though 99% of that slab looks great where it was exposed to the sunlight and quick drying, it starts to fall apart. So it may not be a structural issue. Again, Philip, I'd suggest you do check with the PE to make sure. In Madison, there are several people who are very good. It is hard to get people to do residential work in Madison, but I know that Structural Integrity is one of the companies that has PEs who do that in town. And I know that I've often turned to them for concrete advice because I do not do any calculations on concrete. So for peace of mind, I would have them come out and take a look at it, and you may find a way where that could actually be ground and retopped so it would stop being an irritation and looking ugly.
Thanks for calling. Lisa in Madison, your turn. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I had my house's original wooden floor bearing jacks, I guess, taken out, and then they put in floor jacks. But when I was at the store, next to them, I saw something called a column jack. And it seems like the floor jacks are more temporary, and the column jacks are more permanent for a house bearing. So I'm wondering if that's true or advised.
Now, the steel building columns you have in there now, do they have a bunch of holes drilled in them and a pin going through them, sort of holding it apart so they could telescope?
I think so. I'm not at home right now.
Yeah, that is probably the inexpensive home building column that
it's
you
more
can,
for when you're doing some sort of work temporarily.
Well, that's my feeling, but I'm not sure that that's that's code.
Okay.
The problem with those columns is I don't know what the compressive strength is. When you have a column that has an FHA label on it, it says right on that label what the strength of that column is.
Okay.
And that's why I prefer those. If you were worried about them, FHA posts are not very expensive. You can have somebody come in with a shoring jack and jack next to the existing columns, take them out, and put an FHA post in there. Remember that once they're in and adjusted, the screw is supposed to be disabled, and they need to be secured both to the floor and to the wooden beam above so that it's impossible for them to be kicked out.
So look for FH label?
FHA, Federal Housing Authority. So, you know, if you were building a multifamily and you were getting federal funding, you would need to use things that were FHA certified.
Is there a strength I need to look for?
If it says FHA, it's going to be at least 34 or 38,000 PSI, And unless you've got a gigantic house, a standard 3 inches is going to work.
Yeah, I didn't know what the numbers to go for.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, just look, there's a lot of good contractors in Madison. Just talk to a reputable contractor, and, you know, they're going to be able to eyeball it and tell you. Usually you do not need to go to a full 4-inch column.
You don't.
No.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Angie on Facebook wondered if you could talk about vermiculite as insulation and if it is hazardous related to asbestos.
The answer there is yes. When I started doing home inspections 200 years ago, we used to actually take vermiculite and test it, and sometimes we found it didn't have asbestos. But what the National Association of Home Inspectors says right now, the association of which I'm a member, is if you see vermiculite, assume that it has asbestos content. Now, fortunately, vermiculite can be vacuumed out of an attic surprisingly inexpensively. So there are several insulation contractors in this area, and I'm sure wherever Angie is from, she can find one as well. They'll come with a giant vacuum truck and get rid of it. And then she can start over on a new insulation system. Maybe she can find the people that Ellen and Wausau had, because all three of them had good ideas. I would plan to take that stuff out of there and then start over and think about your venting and your insulation program before you implement.
Very good advice, I think. Our guest today, and he's going to be with us right up until 12:30, John Freiberger, Wisconsin registered home inspector. He specializes in evaluating older structures, and, of course, he does lots of repair work and construction work through his company, Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg. You can join in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It can certainly be stressful when something needs to be fixed in your home. Well, you don't have, maybe you don't have the time or even maybe the money to take care of it, and that makes it even worse, of course, more stressful. Sometimes letting it go can end up costing you a lot more money in the long run, though. Larry Mueller here, my guest today. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg can help you out. He's here to share his advice. And John, once again, happy to have you with us.
Glad to be here, Larry.
Lots of callers online. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, post a question or comment there, too. Roger in Hayward's been waiting a bit, so let's go to Roger. Thank you for calling.
My question has got to do with basement insulation. I have had a little problem where we had a freeze up and insulation got wet, and the company that was doing the drying up process removed 2 feet of wallboard on all around in the basement and pulled the insulation out and dried it out, and then. The assumption was that we would replace the 2 feet of drywall, and as I hired contractors to do that, the question came up whether we should really rip off all the drywall and replace the insulation, because the way it was taken out, well, that's one of the reasons. It was ripped out, and it put it goes up into the cavity, sometimes a couple feet and sometimes a few inches, and it's sort of ragged. And also, the contractor couldn't be sure it hadn't come down from the top of the plate. And so he suggested that we remove all the sheetrock and start from scratch. And I'm wondering if that's a reasonable solution. It seems like maybe that is the safest way.
Yeah. Roger, it certainly does sound like the safest way. There's a couple of considerations I want you to think about when you do it, though. Is first, you're going to take down what's there. One of the concerns that I have, if things got wet, water has this tendency to wick up. And if you did not get the place dehumidified quick enough, you could have a bunch of mold on the backside of the drywall that's still in place. So you want to do a little bit of sampling, and when that's removed, you want to make sure that it's treated as if they were just as if they're removing asbestos or lead. Is you want to have it closed off so that it can't migrate into the house. Secondly, you want to make sure, I don't know how old this insulation is, but if it has a craft paper or a vapor barrier on it, that is an issue also. And so that we want to make sure that the new insulation does not have any kind of vapor barrier on it. And then take a look at the wood, because we want to make sure that we don't have fungal growth on that wood. So take out everything that's there. Make sure that it's clean. When you start, go with insulation that does not have a vapor barrier. When you get up to the sill boxes, make sure things are well tied in and you've got a good air seal up there. And secondly, I don't know how damp your basement gets, but if you have any water issues, it sounds like you had a broken pipe or something, but
Correct.
If you have any water issues, look for a mold-resistant drywall, or what I actually specify is we use an exterior type of board, which is calcium carbonate and fiberglass. There's no paper in it at all. And then we thin coat plaster over it, and it costs maybe 20% more than drywall, but it's the sort of thing where it will not mold, even if you turn the fire hose on it. So think about it real carefully. Do it right, and that way you're going to have good indoor air quality as well as a good thermal barrier.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you, Roger. Chris in Madison. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Hey, a few minutes ago, John said to, whenever you do a project, to use a reputable contractor. So my question is, how do you find a reputable contractor? Is it just word of mouth or Angie's List, or is there some other better way to do it?
I think Angie's List has some value as far as positive comments. I have some concerns with Angie's List with negative comments, because sometimes I've seen things on Angie's List that I really didn't agree with. People can get upset. They put something on Angie's List, and it stays there long after they're done being upset.
Yeah.
So word of mouth, I think, really is the best thing. Talk to other people that you've done work on. Interview the contractors. Now, it depends on what type of house you have. Is it a really old house? Are you trying to match and do custom trim? Or is it a mid-century modern, or is it a fairly new house? How is it put together? A lot of that is going to determine the type of contractor you use. And you may be looking at a general contractor, or you may be looking at hiring a group of contractors. You might hire an exterior specialist, and you might hire your own plumber. So break down your job. See what's manageable. See if you need a general. Check with friends. Check Angie's List. And interview very, very carefully to make sure of what they've done. So many of them now have nice websites. It's really amazing how at least the high-end guys have beautiful websites.
Yeah.
And the other thing to know, Chris, is right now they are busy.
Okay.
Yeah, they are. Thank you. Good luck. Barbara in Madison. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Larry and John. Thank you. I have a home that was built in 1927, and I hope it's correct. I believe it's a rubble stone basement wall, and the former owner painted it. And the paint is flaking and peeling, and it gets a lot of moisture that comes through the wall, and it seems like there's mold underneath, and I'm just wondering how to proceed. There's also one large crack in the wall.
Sure. My favorite foundation.
Is it? Yeah. Why is that?
Well, because they will last just about forever unless you really, really abuse them. They're 18 inches to 2 feet thick. They actually were built as an outside wall and an inside wall, and then the cavity between was usually filled with the little pieces that were left over in mortar. They are soft. They are capable of carrying 800 to 1,000 pounds per square foot pretty easily. But they actually move. They move with temperature change. They move with changes in humidity. The lime mortar that was used in the old days, we had very similar consistency to the stone. So it's really sort of a living, breathing foundation. I really like it. And you can repair them just about forever.
Great. It'll last longer than I will.
It will, as long as you take care of it. They
All
do
right.
develop, just as we do, they do develop osteoporosis over time because the acidic soil works through it and will decalcify both the stone and the mortar. If you email me at FREI.
FREI?
No, EI.
Uh-huh.
At chorus.net. Chorus spelled like a group of singers, CHORUS. I can send you a Word document on specifications for mortars for repair of that sort of foundation. Now, okay. You are right about the mold. The mold is growing on the paint. So you want to eventually just let that mold completely slough off. It wherever the moisture is coming through, it's popping the paint off. It was a bad idea to begin with. And every time you get rid of paint, you'll get rid of some mold. But just go ahead and patch up that foundation. You can use the mortar recipe I'll send you to have the crack done, have a good local mason do it, and you can get another 100 years out of that foundation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So should I scrape off where the paint is flaking and peeling, or?
Oh, I wouldn't go through a lot of work because I'm sort of lazy. I think what I'd do is I'd probably take a broom with some bristles and just sort of sweep the wall and then sweep up what's on the floor, or better yet, vacuum it up with a HEPA vac. And then, you know, next year, sweep it again. Somebody painted my basement, too. It was I have an 1850s farmhouse, and every year I go down and I sweep, and then I HEPA vac up what I swept off the wall.
Okay, and not worry about the mold.
Well, that's why I want you to HEPA vac, because I don't want that mold all over the place. Yeah. The mold is probably in and behind the paint, so we don't want to try to wash it or do anything else with it. Basically, all we're going to do is we're going to sweep and vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks, Barb, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Pat in Green Bay, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry and John. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a little problem. We have a garage that's fairly new. It's about 3 years old, and I'm getting water on the floor during the end of winter and the beginning of spring. Basically, it has a standard concrete slab foundation, but along the back wall, since the garage was built into a small hill, there's a course of concrete block on the back wall, and that block is wet, and I think that's where the water is coming in until the frost gets out of the ground, and then it's able to drain. Like in the summer during rainstorms, I never have water in there, but only at
right.
that time of the year. And I'm wondering if I could hand dig that all up and maybe put drain tile in, or maybe waterproof that somehow. I've seen products that it comes in rolls and you can stick it on. Any suggestions there on that?
You've got both of the right ideas there. The peel and stick membranes work very well on concrete masonry units. Make sure that you get down to the concrete that the concrete masonry units or concrete blocks, CMUs is what we call them, make sure that you get past that joint with your peel-and-stick water barrier. And then the drain tile to remove any hydrostatic head pressure, because we don't want, if that soil freezes really hard, the CMU and mortar is easy to crack. So that drain tile is going to do a couple of things for you. It is going to give you a little spot where if frost pushes, it's pushing against something hollow. Plus, it's going to keep that soil drier, so you're less likely to get frost damage. So both the things that you stated are the way to go. It sounds perfect.
Well, there you go. Thanks, Pat. We had an email from Lois, who has a sliding glass door with side windows that are the same size. I noticed that the bottom board is starting to rot. The glass looks fine. Can that bottom board be replaced?
They are really hard to replace, Lois, but there are structural epoxies out there that are absolutely amazing. And you may be able to find a good painter or carpenter who can use a structural epoxy. If you stop at your local bookstore and pick up a copy of the Old House Journal or any of these, take a look in the back on the structural epoxies, and they'll show you pictures of windows that are 30% rotted that they've rebuilt simply out of epoxy. So if you want to get a few more years out of that door, epoxy may be the answer for you.
And Carla on Facebook owns a house built entirely of cement blocks. It has no basement. She wonders if it's something that she could or should insulate the walls. It is about 50 years old.
Well, yes. Concrete block has a very, very low resistance to heat loss. So the question is, do you want to insulate it on the inside or the outside? Now, if the inside's all finished, maybe you want to insulate on the outside. One way of insulating on the outside is to take a look at what's called an exterior insulation finish system, or EIFS or IFS. I've never known how to pronounce that. But you should be able to go online and take a look at the Stow Company and many others. and they can put on 1 inch, 2 inch, even 3 inches of an extruded polystyrene on the exterior and then apply a stucco over that. That stucco can be nicely detailed depending upon what the style of your house, or if your house has no style, you can add some style. So you may be able to make a big improvement there, not only in your thermal loss, but also in the appearance of the house.
Yeah, absolutely. And Izzy in Manitowoc, hi, thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I have a one-and-a-half-car detached garage. The south wall of that garage is about 7 or 8 feet from an 8-foot-tall retaining wall, and that retaining wall collapsed about 15 years ago, and it's been, since been rebuilt. Great, the contractor did a great job in, with the new wall, but the south wall of the garage sank about four or five inches. I'm considering just tearing down that garage. It has a questionable foundation, and I don't want to, when I put in my foundation, I don't want, and slab floor, I don't want to have to dig down the 4 feet to the frost line. And since it's a detached garage, is there a different foundation slab system I can go to?
Yes, you should be able to go to a thickened edge slab. There are ways of adding a little bit of protection. Now, it's not a tempered space, so we're not too terribly worried about frost heave, but we need to make sure that the subgrade drains very well. So you're probably going to want to have an architect or a PE design it for you, but it should be very easy to construct. One of the things to watch for, Izzy, is make sure that when that thing is poured, that your siding and your wood framing is going to be 8 inches above the grade. So you may have to put quite a bit of thickening on this, on the sides of this thing, and maybe even build it up a little bit, because if we have that, well, we've got a code issue there with the uniform dwelling code, but we want to make sure that that thing doesn't rot. That way, if it's well constructed, you should have a good 100-year lifespan building.
And Tim in Center, hello, thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. This is kind of a follow-up to the gentleman in Greenville with the sump pump. And when I heard Mr. Freiberger say he was from the town of Center, I just had to call. I have bought a 12-year-old residence. I'm on Mayflower, John, between Center Valley and Krieger on the east side of the road.
Okay, I know where it is.
Yep, I figured you would. And I have a lot of water running, so I put in a second sump pump, a battery backup, and a generator. And I did all that because the basement is finished, and water runs in this basement even in the dead of winter, when there's no water running, everything's froze, or in the driest part of summer, that sump pump is going to run at least once an hour. In the spring, it runs really fast. And I was wondering, John, if you know anything about the makeup of the soil in that area. I'm up on a sort of a hill. Although my basement floor is lower than the ditch, I'm up on a rise because I even looked into boring, up through the bottom of the sump pump to get a natural drain, but I couldn't do that. Do you have any idea? Is there rock? Are there springs? I can't understand where that water is coming from.
Yeah, the town of Center and the Greenville area, you've got a little bit of everything. We've got those big marshes where we deer hunted as kids. We've got the tall hills, a lot of which are glacial, and the soil just changes from one place to another.
Okay.
Now, we do have good soil maps in Wisconsin. So the Wisconsin Geological Survey, I don't know how detailed things are, but you could start at the Wisconsin Geological Survey. And then you can also check with the Outagamie County and see what the Outagamie County, I don't know whether you start the planning office or where, but they may also have some soil maps that will tell you a little bit more about exactly what is going on in your neighborhood.
Okay. Okay, and on the county level, that was the planning?
I would start with the planning office at Outagamie County, and then it could be planning and building inspection may all be in the same office there. But just tell them what you have, and you want to find out about soil maps. But
sure.
You should be able to simply Google the Wisconsin Geological Survey And you may find that you can actually download a town of center map. Now, I don't know how detailed they're going to be.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Wisconsin Geological Survey has been around for a very long time, and they're like USGS, but they do things in even more detail.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. Good luck, Tim. Thank you for calling. And Jamie in Palmyra. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I just installed some radiant heat flooring in an addition I put in. I have an unfinished basement with just gravel, but underneath the gravel I have Visqueen plastic just for the moisture barrier.
Yes.
And then in between the joists and the PEX tubing, there's plywood, then there's the PEX tubing, then there's the insulation fill, and then we have a finished floor on top of it. I was insulating the underside of it, and I used the easy no-touch insulation, 3 inches, and I put that up underneath to insulate the bottom from the cooler basement. And a couple of days later, I went in there just to see how things were, and I pulled it down, and then all this water kept dripping down off the vapor barrier, which is up
underneath.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Should I have not used the vapor barrier, or should I not insulate that? Cross draft. I have four vents in there that keeps the air flowing in the basement.
Yeah.
Now it sounds like that you've put a vapor barrier on the cold side of a wall in Wisconsin, and that is one of the largest lawsuits we've ever had in Wisconsin. It was due to manufactured homes doing that. Larry and I have been talking about that earlier. So what is happening there is you're getting condensation from the house is being trapped by the vapor barrier, and then when the insulation, no matter how much you have there, at some point it may hit the dew point. So you are going to need to make sure that you have a flow-through system there where the vapor can move right through that.
So
should I not have the vapor barrier then? I should use regular insulation?
Yes, you should. You need to have a vapor permeable. And the problem with vapor permeable is some of the things that are vapor permeable are not very permeable. So you're going to have to be just a little bit careful about what you're doing there. You may want to talk to, if you can find a local architect to have them actually design it for you, that may be a good idea.
Hmm.
So, as I say, it's already in place and the house is finished.
Yeah, it sounds like you did something that we recommend against in Wisconsin, and in fact, the Uniform Dwelling Code even talks about this, about not having vapor barriers in that location.
So it's got to come out. And
I think it really does have to come out. But before I took John's advice over the radio, I would call a local expert who actually can walk out and see it, and the best person to do that is going to be a local architect.
There we go. Thank you, and good luck, Jamie. I appreciate your call very much. And John, thank you so much. You have. I'm trying to remember if you have a website or not.
I do not have a website. I must be the last person around who is simply too busy to put one up, Larry.
But you do have an email address.
Yes, my email address is frei@chorus.net, chorus like a group of singers. And I have a lot of things because every time I finish one of these programs, I get 20, 30, 40 calls. So a lot of the things like the rubble foundation, mortar mixtures, or the specifications for repointing brick and stone, all of those things are available. If somebody will email me, I'm very happy to send them out to our listeners.
Well, it's been really great, John, and I want to thank you so much for being with us. Look forward to your next visit.
I look forward to it as well, Larry. It's been great. Good questions.
John Freiberger, Wisconsin Registered Home Inspector and, of course, founder of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg, Wisconsin. He'll be back, and we'll do this again with him. Just looking ahead, tomorrow at 11, time for Garden Talk. And, you know, the snow melting after this harsh winter, you may discover some damaged trees or shrubs or wildlife feeding on everything. We'll talk about that tomorrow with a horticulture educator about what you can do to salvage your plants this spring. Stay with us on the Ideas Net.